We welcome in our multi-talented friend, sportscaster, podcast host, author, actor, man about town, Gary Tanguay. Hello, Gary. Doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I lost you there for a second. Do you have me?
I do. Oh, you sound so much better. Yes, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. It's, you know, technology. I had these, like, ear pods, these Apple ear pods on, which I, like, lose all the time. That's why they make so much money, is because I lose them all the time.
You need the kind that you, I've seen some that they sort of drape around your neck, so if you take them out of your ears, you don't lose them. They hang there like a, little necklace, yeah.
That's right, and I'm too cheap, and what happens is when you buy those I think are $100 more, but I buy the cheap ones, and instead I buy the cheap ones like 8 times, so they give me that way too. But needless to say, I digress.
That's why we call you.
Yeah, who couldn't make it?
Hey, so we were talking a little while ago here about how I got hired in radio, and I made the statement, I want to make sure it's correct, I made the statement that I hired you, but George Hale now claims that he did. Is that a true statement?
That's that is absolutely correct. Yeah. And then George always used to get confused because there was another fellow I worked with, Mark Tordway, and he used to call us, Mark Tordoff was his name, and he called us Tordway. He couldn't get it right. He was like, those guys suck, Tordway. Yeah, both of them. But I stalked you, and that's what I tell people. I said, persistence is the key, and I stalked you. I called you from, God, I can remember the payphone on the University of Maine campus. It was outside of Clayton W. Dodge's MS5 class, which was basically class for journalism majors, which was, you know, pretty, was like a basic addition. And, God, I can't remember, but it was on the quad, and you'd say call, and I called you whenever, you know, every week, whatever, and then eventually you, like, just said, I can't shake this guy.
Because
you hired me.
Well, we had met. Was I your counselor at Boise State? Was that?
Yeah, you were. Yeah, because that's when we first met at Boise State. I was representing Mexico, Maine, and I met you at Boise State, and that's when I was really impressed with you. But then once I got to work with you and drank with you, I thought, wow, if this guy can do it, anybody can.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, you know, when you first meet somebody, because in Rumford, Maine, we got one channel, Channel 5, Telejournal News. And it was, you know, Ralph Lowe, then it was Gordon Emanuel, then you did sports, and Steve Martin did sports. I remember Hale doing sports.
Hale
was the first guy I remember doing sports. And then you would fill in. It's like you would do weekends or something.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, you would, like, and then Martin was there, and then, like, you would do, like, you were on a lot, right? And then, and then I saw you at Boise State, and it was like I'd seen, you know, I was like seeing like a TV star.
Yeah. Let that down pretty quickly right there. Well, I think I've told this story before that, you know, a guy named Jim McFarlane hired me when I was still in high school. But years later, George was celebrating, I don't know, his 40th, 50th anniversary of doing a morning show, whatever it was. And I said, I'm going to pop in and see George to wish him a happy anniversary. And when I was there, he put me on the air and he told this great story of how he hired me. But it was a better story than the real one, so I went with it.
Oh, totally. I mean, Hale is, you know, one of the things that we've learned and you've always said, Hale is such an original. I mean, he really is. I mean, George, if George had been in Hollywood, he would have been hosting game shows.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know what I mean? He would have been that guy. He would have been hosting game shows, and he would have had the one-liner and, you know, or a talent show or anything
What's the story? You've told me the story about when George was honored by the New England Emmys.
Yeah, George was our photographer was Bill Messina, affectionately known as Moose, one of the camera guys, and they have a podcast. And he goes, Tanger, you know this guy from Bangor, Maine, George Hale? And I, like, choked, and I go, do I know him? I said, the guy could have fired me about, like, 10 times. And he goes, he killed it, because they were honoring George Hale and Mike and Tommy. And Hale, he said, Hale was the funniest guy in the room. I said to him, hands down, I go, that does not surprise me.
No, not at all.
Not at all. I mean, George should have been doing stand-up, hosting. I mean, you name it. And He got up and he said something like, because he was in the restroom with Gorman. I think he was, and Gorman was in the, like, the next urinal or whatever. And, you know, George got up right away and said, "Oh my God, I just, you know, I was so nervous. I was just, you know, basically," I mean, George basically said he was like taking a whiz, if I can say that, or whatever, you know, "next time I Gorman," you know, and the whole place erupted. I mean, he was great. He was, and I have to say this though too, that the same thing can be said about you, Rich, or about, you know, Steve Martin, who went on. I mean, he was down in Charlotte. Steve McKay, who we worked with, was really talented. There was a ton of talented people, you know, that work in Bangor. And I just, that it really was. There's a lot of good people. Mighty John Marshall, who, like, still does stuff.
He's with us every Friday. You know,
there's so many good, talented media people that were in that market. I mean, really.
Well, I remember running into you at Fenway Park, and this was, you'd maybe been in the Boston market a couple of years at the time, and I remember you saying, there are people, plenty of people in the Bangor market that are better than people in the Boston market.
There's no question.
It's just, it's who you know.
Well, it's who you know, and it's where you were raised.
Right.
You know, like, there are people in the Boston market that were not as good as people in the Bangor market because they grew up in, like, Foxborough.
Right.
You know, it's where they were from, right? So they got, like, when they got out of college, they got a job as an intern. They get, you know, and there are people in Bangor like yourself who didn't want to leave, you know, and even like Frock, for all his insanity, you know, Timmy was also a really talented guy. I mean, The one thing I remember about a lot of people in Bangor is that people could think on their feet. You know, that's one thing I learned working with you and working with George, you know, Timmy too, Steve McKay, you know, everybody could think on their feet. No one needed a prompter at all. And that's something now that I saw lately, like, oh, you know, the last 5 years where, I mean, I would be in a studio with somebody and they'd say, "Where's the prompter?" And I go, I hate teleprompters. I hate them. I mean, they're so constricting. And for people listening, like a teleprompter, you know, you read what's on this prompter in front of the lens. It's all, you know, there's no creativity. There's no living. There's no.
And I remember when they first brought them into Channel 5 and they trained us on them, and the guy that was doing the training said, "Look, the big thing is it's easy to get addicted to these things. You still want to have your script right with you at your desk, and you still want to look at that script. Otherwise, you're just going to get that eyes glazed over look as you stare into the monitor."
Right. And the one thing about it is like, you write it once, and if you're that's the thing with acting. You do 20 takes or whatever with the same lines. I mean, the key is to make it, and if that's what the director wants, the key is to make it sound you're saying it, like, each time, like you're saying it for the first time, which is a talent and which is hard to do. And, you know, when you're reading something off the teleprompter, you know, you want to make it sound fresh. So you have to be able to, like, run with it and think about it. And I'll tell you, man, there's a lot of people that are just addicted to it, that they don't want to take their eyes off it. And that's where you lose all the spontaneity. If people I work with in Bangor, you know, could think on their feet. You know, they just could. There's a lot of personality. And, it's who you know, and it's where you're from. That's just what I found. And for some reason, for me, I loved Boston. I always wanted to live there. So, like, I drove down in my Chevette with a couple of friends with a load of tapes, and I, like, knocked on doors, man. And I just, you know, took anything I could do to get your foot in the door.
So, well, and there have been some people from Maine who have done very well in the Boston market. You, Dale Arnold, Tommy Caron, who've all done very well there.
Oh, sure. I mean, Tom Caron got, we both applied for a job at Channel 13. He got it over me the best. But, like, I mean, and of course, nationally, Michelle Marsh, Gary Thorne. I mean, you know, this, you know, the list, there's a long list there too, right? There's no doubt about it. You know, there's no question. But, you know, I've just seen that some people just choose to live in an area where they want to live, and they like the lack of stress, or they like the comfort of it. The problem now, which is really a shame, is with streaming and with the way people get information now, and, you know, and a lot, even in the bigger markets, Rich, I mean, local news, which are a lot of people cut their teeth, or, you know, local programming just doesn't generate the audience. In one aspect, sorry to give it off topic here, but in one aspect, it's good that if the kid is in Bangor, Maine, is a young, you know, or anybody, doesn't even have to be a kid. You can be however old you are. You can be 50, you know, if you have a phone and you want to create content, you can, you know, and that's the thing, is that there's a lot of great content creators, and it doesn't matter where you live. You
right,
can do
right.
it.
But some you of know, the some you, of the training opportunities that existed for us in the days before corporate radio, when everything was live, you know, you could put a Gary Tangway, a Rich Kimball on a Sunday morning or late at night when they couldn't do much damage while they were learning the ropes.
Right, right. And then for a while, that was going away with automation, with satellite, and there was definitely an absence of talent, because what would happen is if you wanted to work in a larger market, or if you wanted to work in sports radio, whatever, you would cut your teeth at a smaller market and then try to get to a bigger one. But then the smaller markets weren't offering any jobs.
Right.
So, but what's happened now is it's all being replaced by young people who get on their phones and are influencers and bring their own personality to it and can deliver that way. You know, like, you know, I just like these kids, and that's awesome too. You know, that's awesome because anybody can do it. You know, when you and I started, you had to, God, we used to like load those tapes. Oh, and automation. And I used to screw up all the time, and we had to like play. I played opera at a station in high school, and you had to load different tapes to make this was happening and that was happening, and I'd forget, and the tapes would run out. And you had like four tapes, and then all four would run out. There'd be nothing on the air, and I'd be like running around like a chicken with my head cut off. You know, I mean, the opportunities aren't there that you and I had, but they're different,
right?
You know, we're a kid in Bangor, Brewer, it doesn't matter. I mean, hell, they could sit there, do something great on their phone, blast it out to the universe, and become a millionaire.
No, exactly.
I mean, it happens.
Yeah, no question. We're talking with Gary Tangway here on Downtown. Well, let's talk about another new venture of yours, which I got a chance to listen to, and it's a terrific. Tell us about your brand new podcast with Drew Yano, Screen Time.
Yeah, Drew Yano is a friend of mine. I worked with his wife, Suzanne Bates, who was an anchor and reporter at Channel 4. For years over at WBZ-TV, and Drew is a professional screenwriter, has sold stuff in Hollywood, and, you know, and then taught screenwriting at BC after being a lawyer, and like everybody I know that's a lawyer, they hate it. I was writing scripts then, in, you know, like 20 years ago, and I didn't really understand. I tried. I was like reading books about it. I was trying to figure it out. And then I used to have breakfast with him, and he really taught me, like, okay, this is how it works. And he and I wrote a script together that got some play, and it just didn't happen. But we've been like, you know, working on stuff, and we get together and have breakfast like once a week, and we talk movies all the time. And we will talk sports, then we talk movies. And he just understands the structure of film. His history, his knowledge of film is unbelievable. And so we just said, let's put this on a podcast. So we'll pick a topic, and it's movies, streaming, and everything in between. And, you know, for the one that isn't available yet, but the most recent one we did was Where's the Comedy Gone?
Mm.
Right? I mean, you know, where's the next, you know, All in the Family, or the Jeffersons, or, you know, the Seinfeld, or Friends. And I said, you know, right now, a lot of it is what we discussed about. It's TikTok, it's YouTubers, it's, you know, my son will laugh at all kinds of things online that's not from a Jerry Seinfeld. It's from some kid in El Segundo who's jumping over a bunch of barrels on a bike.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and so we talked about that, and we talked about how also, though, Rich, I think that in streaming, like Succession, like Adam McKay, who, you know, I did, you know, Don't Look Up with it, and I'm not name dropping, but I got to talk to him a little bit. When you're on set, you just talk to people. Like, some people look at Succession as a comedy. Like, there's a lot of, if you look at it, there's a lot of comedy in there. It's
dark
comedy.
Yep.
But what they've done is they've taken drama and comedy, and they've put it together. So you don't, I mean, you can, I guess you still have, like, you know, you have some sitcoms, but they on network TV, but they're not like they used to be. right? So anyway, this is the type of stuff we talk about.
Well, I listened to your episode on Winning Time for people who might be getting ready to binge watch, and then your episode on the coming season 3 of Ted Lasso, and they were great. I mean, it's what the best podcasts are, which is two guys who are passionate about something having a discussion.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, like Winning Time, I love. A lot of people don't, especially Boston Celtics fans, but I love it. I think it's, and obviously the Jerry West character has been exaggerated greatly, and if I was Jerry West, I'd be pissed off too. but, you know, Jason Clark, who's been on your show, right, to promote Pet Sematary, you know, I think he was amazing. I think he was, you know, and it's just great. It's, I love Winning Time. And then we did Ted Lasso. We also did one coming out where we talk about, have you seen, on Paramount Plus, The Making of the Godfather with Miles Teller?
I have not. I've heard it's very good. Was it The Offer?
The Offer, dude. I mean, Rich, and anybody listening, watch it. Oh, my God, it's so good. The first episode is a little, it gets going, bear through the first episode, you know, because it takes some leaps where you go, oh, that's kind of, is that really going to happen? But they do it to get you on a roll about the making of The Godfather, and everybody in it is fantastic. It is so good. And then, you know, so we talked about The Offer, then we talked about The Godfather. And, you know, I mean, Pacino, they tried to fire him like 2 or 3 times. You know, Paramount didn't even want to make the thing. They thought that this was a dog movie. You know, I mean, and they didn't want Brando. And Brando goes in and kills it. I mean, you've got to watch The Offer, dude. I mean, you've got to watch
it. Oh, I will. Absolutely. Well, check out the wonderful new podcast, Screen Time. It's available on Spotify, on other platforms as well.
That's a good question. You know, it's CLNS Media. Nick does all that. It's on Spotify, and I think it's also on Apple. You know, iTunes, Apple, and Spotify, but that's the way to go. I should know that, but I don't.
Well, it's great. I listened to a couple episodes. I'll be listening to more. Are you going to do one a week? Is that the plan?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do now. I mean, we got a couple in the can. We're going to try to do one a week. Then hopefully if it picks up, then people can send us their ideas or questions. And, you know, people love to talk movies. They just do. They just love it. So, and we'll have to get Rich Kimball on too, man.
Yeah, well, that's great. I enjoy it a lot. Hey, a quick check on Boston sports. Well, no, away from Boston sports first. What do you think Tom Brady was doing when he was away?
That's a real point, Rich. I go back and forth on that between, was it something with his mother, you know, recover from cancer? Was it something with that? Was it something that Giselle wanted to do? So I think it was either his mother or Giselle, because those are the only two things I think that could keep him away from training camp. Because, I mean, we all know Giselle wants him to retire. She freaking divorced him in a heartbeat. you know, I mean, but she's like, because she thought he was done. So it was either Giselle or his mom. But those are the only two things. That's what I think. I mean, I don't think he was, you know, I've heard theory like something with a promo shoot or I don't think it was anybody. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that the most important thing to Tom Brady is still football. There's no doubt. So it was either his wife or his mother.
All right, Patriots, over under on wins. I'll give you 9. Over or under?
Yeah, I was going to go 8, but you're probably right. You know, I mean, it's just so many question marks about the coaching staff, and it just doesn't look good. And I go 8, 9, whatever. You might be right. You know. It sucks, too. I mean, we were so spoiled. I mean, Rich, it was so good. It was so freaking good. You know, Sunday afternoons, everybody was watching, and now it's going to start to peter out. You know, I think they got I think the quarterback's pretty good. I just don't know about Patricia. But, you know, Jesus Christ, Bill, why don't you bring in some hotshot offensive coordinator that is like that jives with this kid, that speaks the same language of this kid? I mean, it's obvious that Mac Jones is like saying Patricia doesn't. I mean, it's one thing for Tom Brady to go from Charlie Weiss to Josh McDaniels and for Tom Brady to say, okay, Josh, let's work on this together, right? And Brady brings Josh along, which he kind of did at first, but he had won 3 Super Bowls with Charlie Weiss, for Christ's sake, right? You know, now Mac Jones is going to teach Matt Patricia what to do? It's insane. Hey, I don't like it.
I caught the podcast a couple of weeks back when you had Bob Ryan talking about Bill Russell. You shared some memories as well. It was a terrific episode, and we talked with Bob about it. And you said you you had a chance to meet Bill when he was back for one of the times when he was honored at the Garden.
Yeah, I mean, and Bob Ryan's the best radio guest ever. Best radio. There's a dude that loves movies.
Oh, yeah.
Best radio guest. Best radio guest ever. Yeah, the Russell thing was, I got to follow him for a day. I was working for Channel 4. I got to follow him for a day because they had an event where they retired his number again, this time publicly, and it was to benefit his daughter's charity. His daughter was doing a lot of work with Big Brother, Big Sister at the time, and that's why he did it, to raise money and awareness for that. You know, Russ was, and Ryan said it best when it came to Russ, he did not give anybody a pass for racism.
Right.
He was like, you know, I'm sorry. Like, if you said to him, well, it was the 60s and people didn't understand, he'd say, I don't care. That's no excuse.
No.
But when I talked to him, he walked into the room at the Garden. He was very stoic. And he was kind of checking me out, you know, and was like, okay, you know. He knew my camera guy, Richard Chase, who had been and worked for Channel 4 for like forever. He knew him, which helped. So he knew Richard. So like Richard was there. That was a help. But he was like a little, you know, he was like, he didn't know me. So like he was a little, and I don't blame him. I mean, hey, look what the guy went through.
Right.
And then when the lights went on, Rich, oh my God, he was Shakespeare.
Wow.
That laugh. Told the story, smiled, told about how they retired his number, because Red said, I got to retire your number. And Russ was like, Red, you're not retiring my number. I'm not doing the Dog and Pony Show. I'm not coming back. And he said, I'm not doing it. And Red goes, come on, man, you're making me look like a jerk. And Russ goes, all right, look, I think he was coaching a game or he was doing a game for CBS. And he says, Sunday morning before the game with nobody there, I remember this. He says, we'll come in the morning and we'll get it over with. Right? And that was it. Come in the morning, we'll get over. Like Sunday morning, like 9 a.m. in the Garden, they raised like arguably the greatest basketball player of all time. To me, it's still Ian Jordan. Sorry, LeBron. And we'll raise it. We'll raise the banner. Just me and like the Bull Gang. Right? And Tommy was probably around. They probably called it, you know, Jeff. Hondo was still on the team. You know, some guy, Cowens and all those guys. And that was it. And the one thing, you know, I can't. They're working on a documentary. One had been in the works. But, you know, this man's role in society alone was just amazing. You know, just what he went through and the role that he played in society and how smart he was and how well-read he was and how he became such a mentor for a lot of the players today, that number six should have been retired before he passed. And I know it's easy for me to say it had been in the works. And, you know, Adam Silver said it had been in the works, and we were working on it, and unfortunately he passed away. But in my opinion, no one should ever wear six again. I mean, nobody. LeBron should shelve it. I can't keep track of who else has it. I know LeBron has worn it. Number six, period, should go up to the rafters and never be worn. It should not be grandfathered.
Gary Tankwell.
LeBron says that, but I don't know if he can. I don't know if it's going to happen.
Gary Tankwell with us, son.
I mean, sorry, you're probably up against the clock.
No, go ahead.
I mean, my God, I got to interview Bill Russell. I got to walk the course at the Ryder Cup with Sergio and Jesper Parnevik, and I got to interview Ted Williams and eat clam chowder with him. I mean, oh my God! And Williams was unbelievable. I mean, that guy. I mean, he had had the stroke. It's when he came out with the Hitter.com hat, you know. And he and John Henry. It was like, actually, I think I interviewed him the morning of. He was at a suite at the Four Seasons, and I interviewed him. And he was, and John Henry said to him, you know, you can only have half a beer. And he was like, F you, John Henry. I fought in the war. I'm going to have a whole beer. I mean, that dude was kicking to the end. You know, he was like, but he was John Wayne. You know, as I continue the name drop here, this is also crazy. I took my wife, because after the All-Star game, and after we were working 80 hours a week. Rent was in town. I took her to see Rent. And you know who sat next to me? Kevin freaking Costner.
Wow.
I don't know if I ever told you this.
No, I love it.
Kevin Costner's sitting next to me, right? Because Josko Hawick was the arts and entertainment reporter. So she got me tickets for Rent. And they were great seats. I mean, they were phenomenal. So I'm sitting next to Costner. All my wife keeps saying to me is, oh my God, he's so good looking. Oh my God, he's so good looking. And I have to say, he was a handsome man. He, I mean, and you know, and you know, and I'm like, okay, movie star, right? And his daughter was going to BC or something. Then I said, so I'm like, I said, hey Kevin, you know, I'm Gary. I won, you know, I saw you at the Celebrity Home Run Derby and all that. I said, I had a chance to interview Ted Williams today. And I said, that dude is like, you know, John Wayne. And I said, I don't know if anybody will ever play him in a movie. And he turned to me and he was like, yeah, I met Ted and he and I talked about me playing him in a movie. Now, in my mind, I was like, dude, Costner, I love you. I mean, I love Kevin Costner, but there's nobody alive that can play John. No. I mean, could play Ted Williams. Maybe Ben Affleck. Affleck's got the stat. Maybe he could play a young one. But, like, Ted Williams was, like, John freaking Wayne, dude. He was. I mean, he was John Wayne in the movies. Like, he wasn't the greatest father in the world. I know he had out with, he hung out with Bud Levin and all those. He used to go fishing in Maine. But, like, Ted Williams, like, his personality and his persona, he was like John. He was the John Wayne you saw in film.
Absolutely.
And I've talked enough, Rich. I'm sorry.
Not at all. Always a pleasure, Gary. Check out Screen Time. You will love it. A terrific podcast with Drew Yano. If you haven't read it, hey, is there a better way to get ready for the football season than reading Gary's novel, The Arm in the Fall? I tell you no is the correct answer, so make sure you get it. Thanks, Gary.
All right, Rich. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Catch you soon.